Session number 794, Fred Copeman, Reel 13. This is not a original interview.
During these hunger marches, did you have any trouble with the fascists, the black shirts?
Not during the hunger marches, but in Deptford during that period. We're the one bloody borough that kept him out. He never got to start speaking in Deptford Broadway. We used to tip his bloody band over and belt the hell out of us. A little bit of sympathy among the police in Deptford, I think, that's what it was. But one night they changed their bloody colour and belted hell out of us. And poor old Sandy Duncan was taken to hospital. That collected the money. Anything can collect the money you want. Somebody hurt, parade him around and get the bloody things out to help the movement, you see.
Why were you fighting the fascists at this time? Why were you personally fighting?
Because I was against them. They were arrogant. No, I didn't understand him as a point, but they were just arrogant, bloody brutes, you know. They were looking for a fight with everybody. And they were against us anyway, so we obviously were against them.
When you say us, who are you referring
the
to?
The NUWM, the unemployed movement.
I see.
You see, I was very close to the party all the time. I wasn't in it. They realised that.
Yeah.
And I joined the party. Well, I was on the central committee within a couple of months. And was out in Moscow after the war, just after the Spanish Civil War. Met Stalin, you know, went to one of the meetings, I think it was Cominform or Comintern.
How did you get to hear of the Spanish War? I mean, during the early part of 36, was there talk of Spain in the papers, or did you just hear about it after it broke out?
No, when it broke out. When it broke out, the newspapers were headed with, there was a column of students that had come from the universities and were in Spain fighting, and pictures of them, you know, and every day it built up and built up. And then the party suddenly got hold of it and said, we'll back this. Now, I hadn't gone. I was a steel erector and I was earning bloody good money. And I had this job looking after the unemployed, a kind of side business. We had a few little ups and downs. We stormed the bloody county hall with old Morrison, chairman of the bloody, or at least on the committee, reducing the unemployed benefit. He never got to get his bloody meeting underway. He had, of course, he pulled all the strings, and Morrison was a vicious bloody politician, you know, vicious bugger, that one. Biggest scheme of the Labour Party ever had, and he lost in the end. I laughed my bloody head off. When he lost that vote, he got two bloody votes. Nye Bevan got 16, and old Gateskill got, 100 and something. Anyway, the Lightman's Union General Secretary was a chum of mine. I said, look, get us a tug and one lighter, just for a couple of hours. I want a couple of hundred blokes floated up the bloody river and stop at County Hall. Well, all the police were around County Hall, and we didn't talk in those days of 10,000. 100 bloody thousand. It was a small crowd for a major London. The bloody crowd, as far as the eye could see, on the south, the river. Nobody was allowed. Also, they weren't looking at the river. They were all interested in stopping people coming. We sneaked up the bloody river in our barge, climbed up County Hall, got in the bloody window about 8 o'clock in the morning. It was. We knew the committee room. We got in balcony and just sat down and waited. Bloody meeting didn't start till 10, so we had 2 hours drinking bloody tea and eating sandwiches in County Hall. The doors were locked, nobody knew we were there. And then the committee treated in, all old ladies and gentlemen and Morrison. And the chairman got up, and as soon as he got on his bloody feet and opened the meeting, we all bobbed our heads up and said, we want to present a petition. We all had big bundles of paper. Well, he ruled this out of order. And Morrison started to bawl that we didn't ought to be there. And I said, well, we're here now, what are you going to do about it? Well, the fact is, over the balcony we went and slammed down bloody bundles on the chairman's table, and then we were kind of stumped. I threw my bundle at the chairman, unfortunately, and he was sitting in a big high chair, and it hit the top of the chair, and it blew a bloody chair went over the chair, but it was about 80 flat, and that was bad, wasn't it? I was in this time, assaulting the chairman of the official committee. Another bloody 6 months. Anyway, I used to get some good experience in prison, you know. Mm-hmm. Prisoners are curious, bloody people. The most terrible time is when anybody's hung. A fellow was hung at Pentonville, and all the prisoners locked up. The bell rings at 9 o'clock, and I was in a cell, about three from the death cell there, ordinary cells, and the little grill, and that's where they are, and he goes through there. By this time, I got to know the governor, and I had soft jobs in a prison. I could pick my own job. One job, I said, I'll paint the bloody cells out. That'll be my job. One a day. Oh, he said, you're on, Fred. That's a lovely job. I haven't been painting since 1800 and some bloody things, or whitewash. And I used to whitewash a bloody cell a day. If it was a good prisoner, nice and neat. If it was a bad, nice to slap it around so he had a week's bloody work to do. So I became very important, didn't I? Looking after Fred, otherwise your bloody cell would get what? anyway, I got very friendly with the governor and used to spend hours talking to him at night, you know, outside the cell in his office. Really, it became intimate. Get the football results on Saturday and listen to the Arsenal. We were on the wireless in those days, Arsenal were. Good time. And the lads used to turn up at weekends and march around the prison, chant, we want Fred. The band would play our silly band with two fiddles and four drums. That's all we had. And the police used to belt the drums. If they attacked the demonstration, always go for the drum, you know, kick a bloody drum in. So we had to train the lad. As soon as the police charged, put the drum above your head and run like hell, because they cost a lot of money. Anyway, that was it. And in the Spanish Civil War came along, and I was still working. I was doing a bloody good old job for Dornies. I think I was on London Fire Brigade headquarters and steward. And I didn't go up first. And then I was going out with a Scotch girl who was a party member, and she was really nuts on Spain, always telling us the brave comrade, you know, the usual money business. I fell for this. Oh, I better go. Make my girl proud. Anyway, in any case, I intended to go. So I went up King Street, and old Harry said, you're just in time. He said, we knew you were going to come, Fred. We knew you would come. I said, well, I'm here now. What's going to happen? He said, it so happens it's 450 going out tomorrow. You're just the man to look after this bunch. Now, you won't see them. They'll be on a boat train, and they'll arrive in Paris, and the comrades in Paris will collect them, and they'll all go to a huge cafe. And from there, they go down a purple land over the Pyrenees, so you'll get to know them in Paris. Just go weekend, that's what you're on. So away we went. I got to know, of course, I was the leader of them. They didn't take long to know who took charge, and they elected me as the bloke who ran them, and we arrived over the bloody Pyrenees. I've never climbed so much in my bloody life. Every mountain we climbed, we into another bugger, and up we went. And when the hell are we going to get there?
Sorry, just going back 1 second. Who met you in Paris?
Tito!
Josef Brosek.
Brosek, yes, he was a boat. Dark haired, broad. I know him, Shapayev. He can say what he bloody well likes. He was in Spain, all right, and why he say he isn't. Shapayev.
He was in Spain?
Yes.
Good Lord.
But he called himself Shapayev.
That's right.
His name is Tito.
That's right. But he
and he was a commander of the Dimitrov Battalion, which was a Slav battalion. Uh-huh. And they always fought alongside us on the right. And we were very friendly. So this bloody foolishness and him not being there seemed to be so pathetic. And I can't understand why.
Yeah.
It's got something to do with the assassination of the General Secretary of the Yugoslav Communist Party during the Spanish Civil War. And he doesn't want any part of that. But he doesn't make a fuss of it. But I know bloody well who he is. Anyway, it was a good one. Oh, he was a good one.
And he met you in Paris?
What?
He met all your
friends? He met everybody. We had a committee, of course.
Yeah.
People spoke English as well, but he was the big shot. And we got on trains, and it was all open. Every station we stopped at, there was a huge bloody crowd waiting to cheer us on, you know, volunteers for Spain, flags flying, and all the way down to Perpignan. And then we got out and waited till the evening, and then went behind the house. There was another road built through the gardens behind the houses. The bloody police knew all about it, but they manned the gates, which nobody used, and we marched through behind. And we weren't the only ones. There were 450 of us. There must have been 1,000 other bloody nationalities all coming in groups and lumps.
What district was this? Can you remember?
This would be about October, 36.
So you'd be one of the first Britishers out there?
Oh, no, there was blokes out there very early. Number one coming out there before me. They went out in July and August, you see, and they were the column. They called that the International Column.
Yeah.
And then after a time, it became the International Brigade, and that was a complete misnomer because it was more than one division. The brigade was over 60,000 strong. Yeah. And we were in the 15th Brigade, the British. And we went to Madrigueras, and here I turned with me 450, and old McCartney and Tom Winter and with his 50 or 60 lads looked a bit bloody sick, and old Tom said, what are we going to do, Fred? You going to take over? I said, no, I'm bloody well not taking over. I've just brought them here. So you're the commander, you'll have to take charge.
This is Wilf McCartney, not George McCartney.
Wilf, the fellow who wrote the book in prison.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what happened, but we had a good time. I always got in this position where I wasn't in charge, but I could do as I bloody well like, and everybody assumed I was, you know what I mean?
But in fact, Wintingham was in charge, is that right?
No, McCartney.
McCartney, yeah.
Tom Winterham was his adjutant.
Yeah.
Jock Cunningham was in the number one company, who were down on a Cordova front. They weren't in Madagascar, they were at the front. Now, they came back to Madagascar just a few days before we left to go to the front. And, of course, they were still the number one company, and Jock got the flu, so he didn't go with them.
Wasn't McCartney shot?
Yes, Peter.
Kerrigan.
Of course, Peter says an accident. Yeah, and I know bloody well McCartney wouldn't go. They stayed all night arguing a bloody point why he should give up the leadership. And that's when a fellow had done it, you know, trainer, wasn't going to do be as bloody silly as that, so they decided to adjourn the meeting. And they left Madrigal in a bloody taxi to go to, the headquarters, Franco's hometown.
Burgos.
No, his hometown is...
El Perón.
No.
In where Franco was born, or where?
Yes, where he was born. It's a town the brigade was organized in. Albacete. That's it, Albacete. And, on the way, Peter was supposed to have been cleaning his revolver, and it accidentally went off, and it hit old man McCartney in the right place, not too hard and not too soft, and enough to put him in bloody hospital in the arm, and that was the end of that. And of course, Peter said it was an accident. McCartney doesn't want to embarrass anybody. He says it was an accident, but you've got to pick your bloody choose, mate. We know damn well it wasn't.
And that's how Peter Kerrigan became commander, is it?
Who?
Peter Kerrigan, that's how he...
He never was commander.
Who became commander after McCartney?
Wintringham.
Wintringham, that's right. Yeah,
okay. Tom Wintringham became the battalion commander, and his adjutant became Jock Cunningham.
Jock Cunningham,
who'd
right.
Come back from the front.
Who was the brigade commissar at this time? Was the one appointed?
Yeah, George Aitken.
Aitken.
Remember, the Labour Party, comes from up north, lives in London now. He was supposed to have been here, but he didn't turn up.
Yeah. What incidentally happened to McCartney after that?
Well, he just came back to England after he came out of hospital and just worked for the battalion, you know. He's never
But never
any,
went back to Spain?
No, never went back to Spain.
I see. Yeah.
This is all in
September, October, November, is it?
Yes.
Of 1936?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how many would you be then, about?
Well, we built up to 660, uh-huh. Finally.
All British.
The Irish were with us for a little while.
Yeah.
And old Frank Ryan was there, and old Frank was a chum of mine. I knew old Frank. He reckoned he was deaf. He never bloody well was. He was only deaf when he wanted to be. He was a fly bloody lad, that one. But a real lovely Irishman. And they had a punch-up. There was an unholy battle in a pub in a village, and the Irish got stuck in, and so did the English. And finally, they co-opted to join the American battalion. And old Frank went with them. And that was the end of that. I had to go and settle the bloody punch up because Wintergum, as usual, had needed some bloody help. And I said, well, Tom, you've only got to go down there and blow your bloody whistle, mate. They'll stop. They're like the police, you know, the Irish. And never forget, Tom. Anyway, we settled it, and finally the time came to go up the front. Now, the night before we had to go up the front, Andre Marty arrived. Now, Andre Marty is a French communist, and he was the chief commissar of the brigade, who wore one of these ridiculous bloody berries, you know, huge things that hang down on his shoulder. And when he found I was there, he insisted I go and see him, and I went to see him, and he kissed me on both cheeks. I wondered what the hell this was all about. You see, I couldn't work this one out. Then he said, I want to meet you, good brother, comrade, because you led a mutiny and I led a mutiny. Actually, I thought, you silly old bugger. Mine was a lovely mutiny. I don't know what his was. But anyway, that was the sentiment. So I became quite an important person. Martin, yeah, we got into trouble. He's a big shot, isn't he? You know, to get help. It came in very handy during the time I was in command.
He's always painted Marty as a very, very strict man and very brutal man as well. You know,
I think he was.
He was brutal.
Terrible, yes. He one of these disciplinarians, shoot them if they desert. I wouldn't stand for that. Never stood for it. Fought it all along the line. And we agreed, Tavi Pollitt agreed, the British Communist Party agreed. But finally, the lads caved in. I was in hospital at the time and they gave away and they shot two of our fellows. The bloody tragedy was, you see, that business today didn't like what it means. That lad was putting on a bloody jam all right, that kid. And Overton, in fact, was one of the only fellas that were right there when they were. That means there was only 12. Mm. Where were all the other 150? Hey, there were 12 blokes there. I know that. There were Jock Cunningham, myself, Andrew Diamond, this fella Overton, who was scared bloody stiff. Everybody was. But at least he was there. And yet the poor bugger got shot towards the end because he ran away.
That was when you were taken ill on the Teruel front, wasn't it? And Alexander was made commander in your place.
Well, I had come back to England first. Let's go through Karama first now.
Yes, okay.
Well, we arrived. Now, once again, here's Fred, got no real command, just my little group, who'd lost their machine guns. We didn't have any... Lewis guns had been taken away the night before, and we had a dozen bloody great Russian Maxims. Now, I knew how to work a Maxim gun. They sent a Russian officer, and two of us went. He couldn't speak a word of bloody English, by the way. We went from lorry to lorry, teaching these lads how to get over the stoppages, you see. That's the only thing you have a Maxim gun. It's a lovely gun, doesn't stop often anyway. But when it does, you've got to know what to do. Usually a good clout in the right place will do it, any old house. But they're beautiful money machines, terrible things to face. So we had these Maxim guns, and we went up the front, and they had to be given a crew, and it wasn't my people. It was a new crowd that took over. So that we left the got there early, just on sunrise, in lorries we went, unloaded by a farmhouse, lovely old Spanish farmhouse, and had breakfast. And then the companies went, I was attached to number one company with my little group, old Sam and the sailors. And away we went. It was like going to a bloody country fair.
And we were away in 1937.
Sun shining, lovely day, dog fight in the air, the Russians are fighting the bloody... they're doing well too. The Russian planes are like little conker boxes, you know, make an awful lot of noise, but go like hell. Mm. You know, they really were doing their stuff. Little, what do they call them? Chattels, yes. So every time one came down, the lads shoot a bloody heads off. Nobody cared, no bugger. And then suddenly a gun went off, and everybody, you know. And then we noticed one of our, it's all right, the French battery belt in hell, where they were firing at the bridge, I think, at Karama Bridge. I think they're 4-7s, aren't they? Frenchmen, they were the crew. And away we went past those, and nobody took much difference.
But you're advancing in battalion strength, aren't
we? We're in companies.
In companies, yeah.
There were three companies abreast, and I think number four company was in reserve. But when you say in reserve, we were within a couple of hundred yards. And it wasn't even ground. It was all rocks and bloody things to climb over until we got in the olive groves. Then when we got in the olive groves, I heard something funny. Of course, I'd never heard a bloody gun go off before in my life. I've been in the bloody Navy, never been to war, and I heard a little tsh. I noticed a leaf drop from an olive tree. Well, that's funny. Bloody bird must have been armor plated. And then it got a bit more. Tsh-tsh. Oh dear, two more bloody leaves. And then it was getting a bit louder. And then a fella fell down next to me. And I thought, oh God, this is bloody awful. So I started to get worried, you know. And don't let anybody kid you. Only the nuts are not frightened, you know. A nutcase thinks he's a king anyhow, and he doesn't know what pain is, and if you blew his bloody head off, he'd think he was in a football match. But intelligent people are all bloody frightened, you take it from me, and I was scared bloody stiff. But away we went. No, I didn't have any arms. Officers didn't have anything, you know. Just a walking stick, and as a being a sailor, you don't have walking sticks as sailors, do you? But all the others carried a walking stick. And away we went. And we got to a slope, a little sunken road, and over the sunken road, a slope of about 50 yards. And all hell let loose. God. And of course, the lads, most of them, ran forward down the bloody hill and into the valley, and as fast as they could get, because in the middle of the valley were two little hills, one with a little hut on, a white shed, a white brick, small brick building, it wouldn't be me, it'd be a shepherd's hut or something. Anyway, we've been on the left, came up to that hill on the left of it, and Sam, I said to Sam, you know, here, they're all stopping here, let's settle down here, old mate. Now, I had been equipped by my union like a bloody general, you know. They took very proud of Fred going to the Spanish Civil War. So they bought me binoculars and bloody compass and nice uniform and a Sam Brown belt and all the things that go with it, everything short of a bloody sword they bought. So I was well equipped. And, I say, all hell let loose, my God. I should have thought in half an hour, 200 blokes were dead, and that's a lot, you know, in front of half a mile. Poor old man Smith, carpenter, over bloody 70 was, ASW. I suddenly saw him on the bloody map. I said, what the bloody hell are you doing here? He's supposed to be making bloody stools down a bloody mess room. He said, I don't want to be out of the fire. I said, well, you're bloody well in it now, old mate. So you made up your mind, you can get back. And just as I got to that, there was a little plop and his bloody head fell out, you know, one right through the head. That's it. And then young Davidovich, a Jewish lad, little tubby fella, all very jovial kid. He was in the first aid stretcher there, he was. And of course, well, the bloody stretcher bearers were kept busy, weren't they, mate? Couldn't cover it. And he was dashing from one and looking for the most serious. If a fellow wasn't badly hurt, he'd say, get up and run, get up the hill, you, can't do for you, run to the next one. Oh, he's got his leg hanging off, got to tie him up. And he was really going to bloody town. And as a joke, I said, what are you, the local bloody butcher? See? He said, it is bloody butchery, Fred. It is terrible butchery. Kind of pigeon English, you know, a little lead, you know. And, but nice. Yeah. People liked him. And God Christ, just as he opened his mouth to say something, his whole bloody guts fell out. It literally came out, all bloody giblets. No, it didn't fall down. You never saw anything like it. He just picked it up in his hands and stuck it all back again. And there he was, holding his guts in, blood pouring down his bloody legs. A lot of pain on his face. He said, I've been hit, Fred. I said, Christ of Russia, bloody well think so. You better get on your own bloody stretcher, mate. So we got his stretcher and laid him on and carted him back. Five of us carted him back. Between where we were and the bloody wall that this mob were hiding behind, three of them got killed. So we're left with only me and another carrying the bloody thing. It's a very steep bloody hill, you know. Anyway, we got up there. And I'll always remember the thickness of the wall because we struggled like bloody hell to get that stretcher over that bloody low wall. We were so thick. And the bullets were smacking against. Oh, God, I was terrified. My legs were going to get chopped off, you know. People don't admit fear, do they? They kid their bloody selves. And I got over that bloody wall and took my bloody breath. Well, by this time, I'd already been hit twice. I had blood pouring down this hand, coming out of that elbow, and in my on my head. And quite suddenly, the one on the head, and I'm bloody certain it was a fear, blood pressure from being frightened, suddenly rushed all into my eyes, and there was blood everywhere. I thought, oh, my bloody head's going to fall off at least. So the lads wrapped it up, and they took this other lad back, and it's then when I saw this bloody mob, and I said, what the hell are you doing? Where's your bloody guns? You look, if you were fine, you know, there wouldn't be all this bloody slaughter. You could pick these people off. And remember, it's not coming from over there. Most of it's coming from down here. Look, on your right, because I'd been watching in my binocular, and I saw that Frank had already crossed the road of the Dimitrov battalion and way down towards bloody Maratta. And the Germans were bloody sight further. We were in a fix. So I said, all right, I'll go down. Got to go back anyway and get this bloody head of mine done. We get the ammunition on the way. So we went down. When I got down, I met, what's his name, George Aiken. Mm-hmm. And said, now, George, they got no ammunition on these bloody machine guns. Them fired a shot all the bloody morning. They tell me that they got the wrong ammunition anyway. Oh, he said, yes, of course they have. He said, the bloody lorry driver's pissed. He's run into a ditch. Look, there's a bloody lorry tipped on its side. So we went along and took as many boxes as we could, got six blokes, and made them carry some boxes, and back up through the olive groves we went. And of course, when we got there, by now it's evening, sun setting, and we reached this bloody space again. And I keep on talking about fear. See, people are so bloody dishonest. When I reached the edge of that bloody space, now old George went straight over with his boxes and down the wall. I counted bloody 10. I put my boxes one above the other, and I held them to me, and they're big, heavy, long boxes, you know, held them to me guts, and I went down this bloody hill. You never see anybody run so daft down a hill with two heavy ammunition boxes trying to guard his stomach from a bullet. Anyway, nothing hit me, and I got there. So we loaded up the belts. I said, get a bloody move on. By this time, I'd taken over, because Fry was obviously a drip, and I wouldn't work it up there for nothing, mate. All that old slosh, that's all right. But you've got a count of 300 dead. If that bloke's guns were fine, they wouldn't be dead, half of them. Yeah. But they aren't dead. And in the British Army, they shot him on the bloody spot. Simple as that.
This is the night.
This is the evening or the first day. Yes, after the slaughter, during the morning and afternoon. Now, they hadn't fired a shot, and they hadn't bombed a single bloody head up. So nobody knew they were there. The wounded were coming over at that place as far as we're concerned. That was just a wall and nobody was there. Well, we got the bloody guns loaded up and everything ready. By this time, there was nobody in the valley, except our 12 lads were still there around the side, Sam and his little mob of sailors.
This is Sam
and Wilde. And I bawled out, Sam, come on, get back. Coming over, because I could see them through my binoculars all streaming down the bloody hill opposite. This was a valley, flat valley, two little grass mounds in the middle, not more than 10 or 12 foot high. But in that kind of fire, a lovely guard, at least you thought, if it was all coming from the right direction, but it wasn't. The blokes behind the mounds were getting shot from back here, you see. And I bawled to Sam, I don't think he heard it anyway, it's too far away. And these bloody crowd came over the top. Must have been 4 deep, three long lines of whole battalion, with officers on horses, cloaks flowing in the bloody, you know, like bloody Cossacks. They were Moorish troops, good troops. And I shouted to these mix, now hold your bloody fire, don't you fire. If you fire a gun while the sun's up, we'll be blown to bloody eternity, because they don't know we're here. Now, if you hold your bloody horses, you can do your stuff. First of all, the sun's going down, and that's the end of it, because it was going down behind the hill officers, and we'd be in the dark. And secondly, these buggers won't be able to get back. Now, you could shoot them at leisure, but you've got to hold your fire. So it was a bit of a battle to get these lads. One lad said, F Fred Copeland, I'm firing my fucking gun. They're getting too close. And I said, look, I'll knock your block off if you do. And I did knock his bloody block off, but he was going to fire. And I took over his gun, and they did come. They came right within 50 yards. Didn't think, as innocent bloody babies they were. And then these bloody guns, there must have been 6 or 8 Maxim guns, all in a short front, no longer than this room, opened up. And if you've ever seen a Maxim gun, it can dig a trench, you know. Really? A Maxim gun can dig a trench if you hold it in the right position. It just mowed them down, bloody hundreds of them, and they're coot bastards. They soon found out it was all about half of them dropped down, see? And I said, keep going, mate. Don't stop. Fire into that bloody mob. They're still alive, some of them. When they realized it wouldn't give away, those that could run got up, they didn't get away. Bloody horse. We could have had horse meat for bloody weeks because the bloody officer's horses got shot. Well, they lost a whole bloody battalion there. They really, you know, they caught it. And that was it. And I was, by now, I was feeling a bit bloody sick because I lost a lot of blood. And I was unhappy because the lads had lost. Poor old Kit Conway, who was with the number one company, Irish lad. He commanded number one company just like a bloody English gentleman going to the bloody hunt with his walking stick waving around. This way. And I'm looking at him through my glasses thinking, oh, Kit, you silly bastard, you're walking in trouble. And sure enough, he kind of put his stick down on the ground and put his hands on top and went onto his knees and then his head on his hand. And then he just fell over. And I looked close and I could see the blood from the binoculars pouring out of his bloody head. Oh, God.
Did you have your chief of staff there was a man called Nathan?
He was a bit of a case, wasn't he? Oh, a brave one. My God, yes. When I needed courage, that bugger was around. I only had to see Nathan galloping on his lovely bay horse to think, well, if he can go through here on a bloody horse, what am I frightened of down as low as I am? He'd come through the bloody horse, he'd lovely horse, he had a batman, he had a lot, that bastard, you know, attached to the brigade staff. Always giving bloody orders. Him and I had an up and down more than once. Of course, Frank said he was in black and tan, old Frank Ryan. He said, this bastard was in the black and tan and we'll get him. Give him to us. I give him to you. You lynch a poor devil. He's a good soldier. He was a bloody good soldier. He got killed finally. Yeah. Two bloody braves stuck in the middle of a road. And I said, look, you silly daft twit. You know, bravery doesn't need this. This bloody barrage is going to get you sooner or later. I hardly said it and the bloody shell went off. It chopped him in half. It really literally cut him in half. Everything fell apart.
Did he appear at Harama?
Harama? Of course he did. Of course he did. I remember him coming through the olive groves on his bloody horse, and I was telling Lazarus, we'll get that fucking horse, we'll have some good meat. Horse meat's good for you, you know, beautiful meat. They sell it as a luxury in France. We never got it. He lost it.